We've got a barrage of news and notes to get to, something that is making history in the National Hockey League, and unfortunately things that are still taking place in the game of hockey today. We also talk Team Canada and their Olympic roster for Beijing 2020, a little Toronto Maple Leafs stuff. We got to talk the Philadelphia Flyers and a whole lot more on episode 117, crazy, of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Grimard, your host, as always, Tuesday, January 25th. Thank you, by the way, for listening in each and every week. You can follow along and listen to every podcast and catch you up at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Make sure you leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you can do so. You want to share it around, by all means. We are on Instagram and Twitter if you want to give that a follow at ST Hockey Podcast. Also, writing articles for the Hockey Writers about the Vancouver Canucks. My latest piece on Elias Pettersson, and if they hope to make a playoff run, he needs to be elite and not what he has been so far this year. Despite the fact he's been that, Vancouver's like 10-3-2 or 10-4-2 since Bruce Boudreau took over, which is incredible. Speaking of the Canucks, they made major history around the league. We'll kick off the show with that story. We've got to talk an unfortunate incident that happened in the ECHL and some audios to come as well. The Philadelphia Flyers and their funk, I feel like, is one of the most underrated stories going on right now in hockey because it was so dominated by Edmonton early on and what their team was going to look like and which players could or may not be on the block. We'll discuss that a little bit later on. The Toronto Maple Leafs mixing something up and doing something for the first time since these players were on this team, and Team Canada releases their Olympic roster, and we'll go over some notable players surrounding that. But for today's show, I wanted to kick it off on a positive manner, and there is nothing more positive going on in the world of hockey right now than what the Vancouver Canucks have done. The Vancouver Canucks have hired former player agent and former NCAA forward Emily Castonguay, and this was a massive move around the league that saw a ton of people giving love and praise to. Castonguay's now ex-clients, where she, again, used to be a player agent. She was representing New York Rangers winger and 2020 first overall pick Alexis Lafreniere, Canadian star Marie-Philippe Poulin, Matthew Joseph of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and a few others as well. The new Canucks executive is the first female assistant general manager in franchise history and just the second ever in NHL history. The first belongs to the Anaheim Ducks, where they named Angela Gorgon back in 1996. She was the first female assistant GM, and that's coming up on almost 30 years since the last time that happened, 26 years ago when the Anaheim Ducks did that. Castonguay said that it's a historic day. She said it goes to show that women have a place in sports and in hockey. She said she's always had high aspirations in her career and in her life in general. And she said, we'll see where that takes me. Canucks GM Jim Rutherford shed some light on the role and the hire. Basically said that she is going to have a lot of her responsibilities and primary responsibilities are going to be including matters on the CBA compliance, cap management, contract negotiations, and stuff like that. Now, this is where, I feel like it's a brilliant hire for one, because A, the praise that she's getting, but the work that she's done in it. She's been a player manager before, so she understands negotiations. She understands, cap constraints, all that, everything basically that she's going to be put in charge of or a part of. Number two, she's graduated with a degree in finance and then has a law degree from the University of Montreal. So two separate things when you are discussing contracts and legal documents and stuff like that. She's got that taken care of. And then in terms of finances, cap it and everything like that, she's then got the bachelor degree in finance. So she's covered on every legit. This is why when people were talking about this before, and I apologize for not bringing this up earlier when talking about, when there's certain candidates that are coming out, there are candidates for everything. And sometimes, it's not the biggest news story going around, but that was one of the things when I remember seeing news about it on TSN and Sportsnet saying that when Emily was a front runner for this job or she was a legitimate candidate, they weren't kidding on TSN and on Sportsnet saying that she has a real shot to earn this because of these credentials and the fact that she has basically everything covered from personal relationships with players, including being a representative of Alexis Lafreniere, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Matthew Joseph, and other players. And on top of that, she has experience and degrees in both finance and law. Everything you need to be in a management position in the National Hockey League. I think it's a home run. Can I also bring up one other thing too? Is there any other team right now in the National Hockey League that has had a better turnaround than the Vancouver Canucks? Is there another team that has done a better 180 than the Vancouver Canucks? You think back to the offseason when at the time general manager Jim Benning was in charge and he made that trade with Arizona, which I didn't hate, you know, but he got rid of like the final year contracts of like Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel and guys like that. And he brought in Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's got six more years left on his deal. And then Connor Garland, who's been a good ad for that team. And then, you know, instead of, you know, certain players, he goes and adds like guys like Tucker Poolman, and everyone's scratching their heads and, you know, and like they've drafted some good players, don't get me wrong, and Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and those were all locked down. And then they just got off to this abysmal start. They were like 8-15-2 to start the year. They fire the management group. They fire Travis Green as the head coach. They bring in Bruce Boudreau. They bring in Jim Rutherford. And now Emily Castonguay, who is more than qualified for the assistant GM position. And they're 10-4-2. Since the coaching change, the culture change, like players are starting to figure it out more. Brock Besser is getting back up there. Quinn Hughes is doing his thing. JT Miller. And by the way, I know they've lost the last couple of games. They have all of their top players. JT Miller's on protocol right now. They had their fourth string goaltender, Michael DiPietro, make an emergency start. And they had an emergency backup behind him. Like they've got Halak on COVID, and it's just, it's a mess right now, but they are still 10-4-2 since those changes, and now have one of the, arguably one of the best hires so far this season. And I think she's going to pay dividends in the long run. And it's not just because she's a female, has nothing to do with that. It's because she's the best applicant for the job. That's what I love about it. Because she is qualified on all three fronts. She was a player. She was a player agent, so she knows relationships. She knows negotiations during contracts. She has a bachelor degree in finance and a law degree. All three aspects that culminatively make you an incredible candidate for a job like this. Right? It's not just a former player who's been around the league for a while. It's not a well-liked broadcaster who can smooth talk their way through things. No, no, no. They hired the most qualified candidate. That's all it is. Is it also, you know, pretty amazing that it just happens to be the second female ever? Sure. But it just goes to show that they didn't just do it because she was, you know, female. They did it because she was the most qualified. And she beat out everyone else that simply was not qualified enough. Simple as that. And that's why I love the decision. And and she spoke to the media earlier yesterday too. And, you know, she's talking the talk. She's right there with it. And she clearly knows a lot more than most people. And I'm excited to see what she does. I'm excited to see the role that she brings. And I'm excited for her to be a part of the rebuild there in Vancouver. Not of the roster, but of the culture, of the management group, and of the way they go about things on a day-to-day basis. So congratulations to Emily. It was a long time coming. 26 years in between assistant general manager hirings for females. And the best thing too is she said that she never felt like there was a barrier. She never felt like there was a border. She believes that there has always been a place for women in hockey, and this just goes to show. So congratulations going on out to her. Now, unfortunately, we have to go from a really positive story to a negative story, and one that took place in the East Coast Hockey League between the Jacksonville Icemen and the South Carolina Stingray. A game was taking place, and Jordan Subban, who's a member of the South Carolina Stingray, got into a tussle with former forward of the Jacksonville Icemen, Jacob Panetta. During this scrum, the referee broke them up. Jordan Subban went to the bench. And when the referee turned around, Panetta decided to gesture in the degree that looked like he was taunting Jordan Subban by acting like a monkey. Now, Jacob Panetta later was then released by the Iceman, suspended indefinitely, and released this statement. I'm going to play the entirety of it. It's about 2 minutes and 40 seconds long. And then we're going to come off it afterwards, and I'm going to break it down.
My name is Jacob Panetta, and I would like to address the incident that happened between the South Carolina Stingrays this past Saturday in the East Coast Hockey League. Jordan Subban and I were talking in a heated manner when the linesman got between us. When the linesman was between us, I said to him, "You're only tough once the refs get involved." And I did a tough guy bodybuilder-like gesture towards him. I made the same bodybuilder gesture to non-racialized players a number of times when there have been on-ice confrontations. There's video from previous games which demonstrate this. My actions towards Jordan were not because of race and were not intended as a racial gesture. I did not contemplate at the time that it would be perceived by some as a racial gesture, and I attempted to convey this to Jordan when we were sent to the dressing room during the game. I was confused after the incident until I saw and told how people viewed it because of the players involved. I want to reiterate that no racial slurs, noises, or anything of like were said by me during the incident. I see now from Jordan's reaction that he and others certainly viewed it as a racial gesture, and that my actions have caused a great deal of anger and upset to Jordan, his family, and countless others. I want to express to everyone, and especially Jordan, that my actions were not racially motivated at all. And I sincerely apologize for the pain and suffering and anger that my actions have caused him, his family, and everyone who was hurt by this. However unintentional my actions were, I acknowledge the impact of my gesture and will commit to better understand the impact going forward. Those who know me understand that this gesture was not intended to be racial. It is not who I am. It is not how I have been raised. But at the same time, I need to and will learn from this. Racism and other forms of discrimination have no place in society, including hockey. And I believed that before, and I still believe that now. I intend to fully participate in the ECHL's ongoing investigation into this matter. And I will continue to reach out and contact Jordan and the Subban family to express my regret. I want to thank everyone in Jacksonville that gave me the chance to play professional hockey. And I also want to thank my teammates for the opportunity to play with them. Thank you.
If you have seen the clip, he's sitting in what looks like a hotel room. And it looks like there is a script there. And now I'm going to say one thing, because I saw a lot of people blasting him, and I'm going to get there. But not everybody is well versed in being able to talk in front of a microphone, be a camera, but that is going out to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Some people are not as well spoken as others. I have come to learn this, and I've come to not criticize people for that. Because I do this for a living. I went to school for radio broadcasting. I know how to articulate myself. I know how to speak in a certain manner. And I understand that some people don't have the same way. He is a significantly better hockey player than I am. There's nothing I can do about that. Why? Because he's practiced more. He plays at a professional level. Having said all of that, the one thing that I took away from this, the clip is, let me pull it up here. The Jacob Panetta clip is 2 minutes and 40 seconds long. It took him till the minute 41 mark to say the words, "I'm sorry." He doesn't lead the statement off with apologizing. He doesn't lead off by saying to Jordan, to hockey fans, to the black community, I'm sorry for what I did. No. He states his name. He states the incident and explains what he meant to do. He defends himself. He tries to change the viewpoint that saying he was acting like a tough guy bodybuilder. Now, even if that were the case, Jordan Subban saw this and he was saying something which made Jordan Subban go irate. And I doubt it was because he was calling him a tough guy bodybuilder. You know what I mean? And like I mentioned earlier, I understand that not everybody can articulate themselves and speak in a manner that is confident, that they don't need a script. There was clearly a script when he was reading that. And that's fine. But a minute 41 seconds to say the words, I'm sorry. He doesn't say it often. A minute 41. Does he make that gesture, by the way, to anybody else on the ice? There's a big scrum of people. I'm going through the clip here. It's him and Jordan talking back and forth. There are two other Stingray players there. They're talking to the refs. They're walking around. Jordan Subban's, you know, got the refs there. And then he makes the gesture. And I had to mute that part because fans are yelling the N-word in the background. And then Jordan Subban goes irate. And honestly, I don't blame him. Here's one thing to consider. Why did he spend so much time trying to convince you in the first 1 minute and 40 seconds that what he was actually doing was a bodybuilder tough guy pose? Because he said it multiple times. Instead of apologizing, instead of just taking responsibility and realizing what he did and who it went and who he was directing it at, with the history and what has gone on over the last calendar year and a half, maybe two, with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the creation of the Hockey Diversity Alliance, with players like Matthew Dumba, Mark Fraser, PK Subban, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, because that was his younger brother. That's the gesture you make. I don't buy it. I don't. And unfortunately for him, I don't think anyone else buys it. Not that I'm an expert, but being in broadcasting and understanding the way people deliver certain things, how they say them and why they say them, the fact that it took him a minute 41 seconds and that for the first minute 40, he wasn't apologizing to the fans, his teammates, to Jordan. He was making his case. And that's where I'm out. That's where I don't buy it. Neither does Jordan Subban and neither does his brother PK. Both spoke on the matter. Because at the time, the Jacksonville Icemen tweeted, overtime began with a rough fight resulting in multiple penalties on both sides. Jordan Subban responded, more like Jacob Panetta was too much of a coward to fight me, and as soon as I began to turn my back, he started making monkey gestures at me, so I punched him in the face multiple times, and he turtled like the coward he is. There fixed him. PK afterwards came out with a statement, and I'm going to read the whole thing because this is important. They don't call the East Coast League the jungle because my brother and the other black players are the monkeys. Hey, Jacob Panetta, you shouldn't be so quick to delete your Twitter or your Instagram account. You will probably be able to play again. That's what history says, but things are changing. Now, not just the hockey world knows your true colors, your hometown of Belleville knows, your family and your friends know that you're a fraud. with everything that has gone on in the past couple of years in the world, I'll say with all due respect to everyone who has an opinion, this isn't a mistake. We all know what's okay and what's not. Even your own teammates wanted to see you get your clock cleaned. This happens a lot, and it never gets exposed in the lower leagues. One thing that I love about this is Jordan teammates standing out there with him and showing support. Love that. Shout out to Rob Cannon and the Stingrays hockey team. Leave your comments below. I'm done. Fans yelling the N-word is a great add to it all. Now, since then, nothing else from the story has come out. But the suspension is indefinite, and the Icemen released Jacob Panetta from the team. So now we are waiting to see what happens next. And I read the statement earlier from PK Subban. He then spoke afterwards for almost half an hour. And this is the worst part. The only reason I'm talking about this incident and not the one that happened a day earlier was because this is just the newer one. This incident occurred one day after the AHL suspended Christoph Hrabek 30 games for directing a racist gesture at Boko Imama, who is also black. Subban said it keeps happening. So we can look at one incident and talk about it all we want, but tomorrow there might be another one. And the next day, there might be another one. Now, PK said afterwards, too, that Jordan is doing okay. He's trying to move on from the experiences that he unfortunately had to endure. Not just from Panetta, from the fans. And it's awful. And at what point, too, does hockey in general issue a zero tolerance policy? Now, there's always going to be smack talking in the game. There's always going to be trash talk. Guys are doing it all the time, right? The famous Claude Giroux calling people pigeons, right? Guys are ripping each other back and forth. Twitter's getting in on it in terms of chirping. Like, you saw them with the Carolina Hurricanes and Brad Marchand and, you know, Vincent Trocheck starts the thing off by saying, "You call me a rat," and because that's, you know, the nickname for Marchand, or that's how people refer to him as. And then, you know, Marchand says, like, comparing a Lamborghini to a Prius. And then Trocheck scores like 3 points and Carolina routes Boston, and Carolina tweets L is for loss and not Lamborghini. And then Brad Marchand comes right back and says, "You're the reason we play 20% escrow." Like, it happens. Trash talk's part of the game. Trash talk's part of sports. Right? Getting inside, mentally inside the head. But there is a line where you take it too far when you start cussing out people's families, cultures, background, and issue racist remarks towards them and make gestures that are just as bad. Calling out people's families, things like that are not okay. There is a clear line as to where you go. People saying, you know, take trash talking out. No, no, it's never going to happen. There is a competitive nature to professional sports. Trash talking is going to happen. You get inside your opponent's head. But at some point, whether it's got to be linesmen or everybody needs to be mic'd up and all the footage afterwards gets seeped through, and comments towards people's families, cultures, and backgrounds of racist manner, that needs to go. And I very much realize that it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to show and act upon it. And I know that this is a small podcast that probably won't get heard by a lot of people. But I am one of the more competitive guys out there. I play junior hockey. The league I played in was nicknamed the Goon League. And there were a fair share of black players in it. And at no point did I ever think of referencing an opposing player coming down on me who was black or of a different descent or ethnicity, a racist gesture to throw them off their game or to get inside their head or because I was pissed off. There is a clear difference between right and wrong. And Jacob Panetta, you were wrong. And I know it seems, I'm talking to Jacob here. I know it might seem unfair to single you out and to make you the example, but someone needs to be made one to show that it's not going to be tolerated anymore. There are so many important players in the league today that are such an inspiration and representation for hockey to be played at a high level by multiple ethnicities, races, colors. PK Subban, Darnell Nurse, Malcolm Subban, Wayne Simmonds, Anson Carter back in the day. For all his legal troubles, Evander Kane, who's a 30-goal scorer. That's a big deal. Wayne Simmonds is a multi-30-goal scorer, was one of the most dominant players in the 2010s for the Philadelphia Flyers, was a consistent net front presence, and was a legitimate power forward scoring winger. 30-goal scorer, was one of the most dominant players. That's significant. PK Subban was one of the elite defensemen in this league. Offensive defenseman, had swag to him, also cared an incredible amount about his community, and literally gave $10 million to a Montreal hospital. There's a wing called the PK Subban wing, or it's named after him to an extent. Darnell Nurse and all the work he does in Edmonton. He's one of the highest paid defensemen in hockey, over $9 million. He's right up there with the elites. That's a big deal. Anson Carter was an Olympian for Team Canada. That's a big deal. Jerome Iginla, one of the greatest forwards players in the history of this game. One of the class acts, one of the greatest captains of all time. These are important figures that have come and gone. The Boston Bruins just retired Willie O'Ree's number, the first black player ever in the National Hockey League. That's a big deal. These are huge, monumental steps that we need to keep moving forward on. Not because it's the right thing to do. Not because finally there's an incident that happened and now we say that's enough. It's because it's the right thing to do. Because it is wrong to neglect and turn away people who want to play the sport. And seeing incidents like what happened in the ECHL over the weekend and a day earlier in the American Hockey League is going to turn those young black kids away. It's going to turn them away. I was at a game here in London, Ontario. It was an exhibition game. And this is going back to 2011. So 11 years ago, it was an exhibition game between the Philadelphia Flyers, Detroit Red Wings. Detroit ended up winning the game 4-3 in a shootout. And one of the shooters was Wayne Simmonds. Took the very first shot in the shootout. And as he was coming down on the Detroit goaltender, I think his name was, let me look it up, Jordan Pierce. A fan threw a banana mid-shootout, mid-shot. Hit the ice. Wayne Simmonds at the time was 23. You imagine, 23-year-old, 10,000 fans, exhibition game. You're not an established player yet. This is your moment. You get chosen to go in the shootout. You come down, and a banana gets thrown at you. It's been happening for years. You know what he said? This is a direct quote from Wayne Simmonds. He said, quote, "When you're black, you kind of expect racist things. You learn to deal with it." That's not good enough. And this isn't in the 1970s or 80s or 90s or 2000s. This is 2011, where we thought we were more accepting, where we didn't think it was going on. And listen, let me just preface this, by the way. I'm in no position to talk about it as if I have experience because I'm black or a minority. I'm not. I'm Caucasian. I'm white. I played hockey growing up. The majority of my teammates that I played with were also white. I can't speak on the matter. I am not in Wayne Simmons' shoes. I'm not in Jordan Subban's and PK Subban's and Darnell Nurse's and Matthew Dumba and Anson Carter and the multitude of other players that are currently playing. I'm not in their shoes. But instead of ignoring it and not talking about it, this is going to be the longest segment of the podcast because it's right, because it deserves to be the longest segment that I talk about today. Because it keeps happening. And when is it ever going to stop? Someone needs to be made an example of. Now, I have come on this podcast before, and I have talked about other issues that have gone on, legal issues, and I've talked about I believe in second chances. And I do. But not after you have shown that you have improved, developed, and fully understand what you did was wrong. Take responsibility for it and go through the process of learning to never do it again. And also that you serve the punishment. You know, I brought this up with Logan Mayhew around a sexual assault case when he was playing over in Europe. He was suspended 6 months. He'd gone to rehab. He'd gone to therapy. He'd talked to group activists and he apologized and renounced himself from the NHL draft. Now, he still got chosen, but he showed he took all the right steps. He was suspended 6 months. And in those 6 months, went to therapy, talked to people, went to group activists, took the necessary steps. That's what Jacob Panetta needs to do. He needs to understand whatever punishment coming, he needs to take it, which he said at the end there. But he needs to do more than just say, I'm sorry, and take his punishment and move on. He needs to learn what he did was wrong and talk to people and grow as a person so that it doesn't happen again. So that when he talks to people, he is the example that he can walk into to a group of kids, to teenagers, and say, don't be like me. We'll see what comes of it. But as of right now, he's been released by Jacksonville and suspended indefinitely. I know that was a bit of a longer segment, but I feel like it deserved to be talked about in length. And I'm going to be honest, I'm glad I did it. All right, I want to move on here. I want to get back to, you know, the stats, the numbers, and I want to start talking about some NHL teams. And one team that has unbelievably gone so under the radar for the current skid that they are on is unfathomable. The Philadelphia Flyers lost last night again to the Dallas Stars 3-1 and tied a franchise record with its 12th straight winless game. They've lost all 12 games over that span, matching the mark set by the team back in 1998-99, where they lost 8 games and tied 4 over a 12-game stretch. Now, it's not, they haven't lost 12 straight, because technically, if you lose in overtime, it counts as a winless night, not a loss, which is stupid, but it's not a whole lot you can do about it. But the Flyers play again tonight against the New York Islanders on the second half of back-to-back, and they can hit their all-time worst streak. And you know what's being mirrored over it, which I don't want to take credit away for. Keith Yandle got a standing ovation because he played in his 964th consecutive game, which is fantastic. It's unbelievable. And if you listen to Spittin' Chiclets, they'll do a whole hour on it because Keith Yandel's their boy. And it's great. Phil Kessel's also been doing it for some time. But I want to talk about the Flyers in general. And I feel bad for Yandel because he came from the Florida Panthers, a team that was really good and he was a really good part of. And now he goes to Philadelphia, who I thought they swung for the fences on their moves. They gave up a lot of draft capital. They moved off of Nolan Patrick. They brought in Rasmus Ristolainen. They brought in Ryan Ellis. Oh my God, I feel bad for Ryan Ellis. Look at Nashville right now. He should absolutely be a part of that team with Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg and Granlund and all those guys and Duchesne and Johansson. But nobody is talking about the Flyers not having won a game in 12 straight. I'm going to call it 12 straight losses. I don't care if they call it a winless streak. If you lose in overtime in today's era, you lost. You lost. You don't come out of there feeling like, oh, we got a tie. No, we didn't win, but we didn't lose. No, you lost. If you lose in a shootout or overtime, you lost. Now, again, I'm going to take a quick moment here. Congratulations to Keith Yandel. He's going to beat the record, which was held previously by retired center Doug Jarvis, who's atop that list. And, you know, I believe he's going to play tonight and he will beat that record. And listen, it is remarkable. Playing 964 consecutive games. You think about today's game, how many guys get hurt, have a maintenance day. There's so many players that will play 80 of 82 games, 81 of 82 games, 79, 78, doesn't matter. And they only miss like two or three games all year long. One of the best examples is like Alex Ovechkin. Everyone talks about his durability, right? And he ends up playing like 79 or 80 games or even 78. And everyone talks about how durable he is. But Keith Yandel, 964, going to be 965 and then counting as the Iron Man status is just... it's unfathomable. It's unbelievable. Some of the other guys that are part of that streak right now, I believe, is Phil Kessel is up there, or was up there for a bit. He was around like 700-800 games, and that was ridiculous. Yeah, so Phil Kessel is third on the list at 940. His is actually still going, and he could also pass Jarvis before the end of the season. So that's really cool, too. So in all seriousness, Keith Yandel, congratulations. The fact that you are still competing at a high level and playing an important role and playing pretty good minutes on a Philadelphia Flyers team. Now, it's unfortunate you're losing, but bravo to you. Congratulations. But getting back to this Flyers team right now, that is just an unmitigated disaster. They are right now dead last. This is how bad it is, okay? The Metropolitan Division right now, the bottom three teams are the New Jersey Devils with a record of 15-20-5, the New York Islanders 14-14-6, and the Flyers 13-21-8. The Philadelphia Flyers have played eight more games than the New York Islanders, eight more due to COVID protocol. They are tied with 34 points apiece. Tied. They've played two more games than Jersey, and Jersey is a point ahead. It is bad in Philadelphia. Like, it's god-awful. Their leading scorer right now is Claude Giroux with 33 points in 38 games. Cam Atkinson is 31 points in 41. Travis Konecny, wasn't this dude before, like, putting up 50, 60, 70 points a year and 20-plus goals? He's got seven goals in 39 games. Joel Farabee only has 18 points. What happened to Sean Couturier? This point per game, defensive, the Selke candidate? It was him, Ryan O'Reilly, and Bergeron every year. Six goals, 11 assists in 29 games. JVR, yikes. That $7 million contract, 41 games played, 16 points. Ivan Provorov, 15 points this year. And boy, Carter Hart, they started off strong this year. Carter Hart, 7-13-5. You want to hear something crazy? Philadelphia has lost 12 straight games. They're 0-8 and there might be 0-9-3 or whatever. Carter Hart has a sub 3 goals against at 290 and a 9-11 save percentage. And he's 7-13-5. It is not on him. Martin Jones, he's been awful. 352, 902. I've never understood him as a goalie. I thought he was a good fit earlier on in the year. He's kind of faded out. And then they've played this Frederick Sandstrom or Felix Sandstrom guy. Played a game, 3 goals against, 281 goals against, 935 save percentage. It's not on them. It's not on the Keeps. Ryan Ellis has played just 4 games this year. Morgan Frost has played 22 games. Kevin Hayes, remember his dominant two-way play? Just 20 games played, only 9 points. Rasmus Ristolainen, 10 points in 37 games. There could be some big names on the move from this team. And Travis Konecki, or Cam Atkinson, sorry, is another guy who they acquired. They moved Voracek, they brought in Atkinson, Ristolainen, Ellis, and Ellis has only played 5 games, which sucks because he's a big difference maker. But man, is it so under the radar because of the Edmonton Oilers and how bad their streak was? I wholeheartedly think that's why. We are going to be seeing some changes happening for that team in the near future. And yikes is all I'm going to say about it. That's all I'm going to say. I want to bring on here I want to move on and talk a little Toronto Maple Leafs, because I didn't do that last episode. I want to now. And the Leafs, you know, they got over some protocol stuff. They got over some injuries. They lost a couple games. Everyone was freaking out. Mitch Marner's now back. They won over the weekend against the Islanders 3-1, handled them very simply. And starting to get some players back, starting to get healthy again. The only other player that's really hurt right now is Jake Muzzin. So the Leafs decided to try some new lines at practice. Sheldon Keefe decided to play with the lines. I'm going to read you the lines. I want you to tell me if you know what the difference is or something that they've never done before. First line, Michael Bunting, Austin Matthews, Andre Kasha. Second line, Ilya Mikheyev, John Tavares, Mitch Marner. Third line, Alexander Kerfoot, David Kampf, William Nylander. Fourth line, Pierre Engvall, Jason Spezza, Wayne Simmonds. Notice something? It's the first time ever that Matthews, Nylander, and Marner were all on separate lines. Sheldon Keefe said he's been looking to do this for a long time now, basically since training camp before the season started. But everyone's healthy. Every line has a star on it, even Tavares and Marner. They're reunited. Remember when Tavares first came to Toronto and they were the pairing where Tavares put up 40-something goals and Marner had his 94-point season? Ilya Mikheyev is scoring again. That line's basically reunited. Matthews still plays with Bunting, but Kasha gets bumped up. And Nylander drops back with Kampf and Kerfoot. Now, Kerfoot's had a really good year this year. He's got like 28 or 29 points. Nylander's obviously been one of the catalysts for the Leafs, and David Kampf has been a great signing for Toronto. A 2-year deal, really good defensive third-line center. But now every line has a player who can drive the line. And the reason that they want to do this is they want to just see, one, how the team looks, but how the opposition might look to contend. Right, if you are putting out your defensive pairings and you want to shut down Austin Matthews, understandably so, so you put out your top pairing. But then you have a second line of John Tavares and Mitch Marner. You're like, shoot. All right, maybe we put our first line pairing on them, our second pairing on Matthews because it's Bunting and Kasha. And then our third pairing, William Nylander. We forgot about him. What do we do with him? Because Nylander is going to absolutely obliterate third pairing defensemen. Obliterate them. Him and Kerfoot already have chemistry together playing with Tavares. And Kampf is just a really good puck battler in the corners. And that's what I like about it. Is yes, all the stars are on different lines. But there's a lot of duos and players that already have chemistry in place. Nylander and Kerfoot have been playing together all year long. That's their new duo. The second line, Tavares and Marner, have an entire season together. Mikheyev was also put on their line last year going into the playoffs. They're familiar with one another. And Matthews and Bunting have basically been joined at the hip very similarly to Zach Hyman and Austin Matthews. And Andre Kasha has had a look on that line and they've looked good. They are trying to balance things out just a little bit more just to be like, we're coming at you in waves. And then Engvall, Spezza, and Simmons. Spezza looks great. Simmons is beautiful on that fourth line. And Pierre Engvall is playing out of his mind this season. Of course he is, because it's a contract year. Defensively, things haven't changed. It's like Riley Brody, Sandine Hall, and then Dermot Liljegren. But putting them on separate lines is now going to give them an opportunity to see managing their minutes together, getting a chance to see what other teams do. And this is going to be the scary part. William Nylander, who, by the way, is second on the Leafs in points, is on the third line. And he's excited about it. He said, quote, I think it's a good way to spread out the guys on the team. He said, me and Kerfoot had chemistry before. Kampf's a smart player, really solid defensively. I think it could be really good. Tavares back with Marner. Tavares scored a career high 88 points, 47 goals in his first year. Tavares said his ability to read the play and manipulate the opponent is as good as any winger in the game that I played with. As a line mate, you're always just trying to get open. Tavares doesn't have to drive a line anymore. Marner gets to drive the line. Matthews gets to drive his line. Nylander gets to drive his line. What is Keefe doing here? He's putting the puck in the sticking hands of his best players. Anyone watch football over the weekend? And watch that Kansas City Buffalo game. Came down to the wire, one of the greatest games in the history of sport. What do the coaches do? Put the ball in the hands of their playmakers. Yes, they're quarterbacks. But then guys like Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Isaiah McKenzie, right? Playmakers. San Francisco 49ers, Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, put the puck in the hands and stick of your playmakers. Let them carry the line. They are better with the puck. If you try to put them together, there's only one puck out there. It's like the NBA. You can have a barrage of superstar players, but they've got to have different abilities and attributes. You can't put two shooters together because there's one ball. You can't put, now, I mean, the Golden State Warriors are they're the anomaly in this situation because Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are like two of the greatest shooters in the history of the sport. But we've seen it with James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. There are certain guys that need the ball in their hands. There are certain players that need the puck on their stick. Those players are Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander. I'm excited to see if they do it in a game. I'm excited to see if it works. If it does, good luck to every other team out there. And lastly here, before we head on out, Team Canada just announced their roster for the Beijing 2022 Olympic Games. Notably on the roster includes former NHLer, probably a Hall of Famer, Eric Staal, Jordan Weal, Daniel Winnick, Josh Hosang. On defense, guys like Jason Demers, who's played in the NHL a long time, Tyler Weatherspoon, first overall pick from this past draft, Owen Power, and in net, Devin Levi, who's a prospect of the Buffalo Sabres as well. Adam Tambellini is going to be on it. Jack McBain, Ben Street, Corbin Knight, Daniel Carr, Eric O'Dell, Adam Cracknell, who's a former NHL player, Landon Ferraro, and David Desharnais. Remember him? Former Hab? It's going to be an interesting team. Having said those names, I remember from 4 years ago, I don't know about you, but I didn't watch it. I didn't. It was not the best on best. The world did not get to see the greatest hockey players come together and compete. They didn't. Right? This is like the World Cup for hockey. Canada does have the World Cup of hockey, but that hasn't happened in a very long time. They did that to kind of supersede with the fact that players didn't go to the Olympics or to try and like create another best on best. I will probably watch this one. One, because it's very similar to like the World Juniors where guys like Devin Levi are going to play and Owen Power. You want to watch those players play other countries. And men, you also get to see guys like Eric Staal and David Desharnais and Daniel Winnick and guys who played in the NHL before that know what it takes to win. It's very exciting stuff. Now, other teams have already made their team announcements. United States has made some announcements. There's a couple Leaf prospects going on there, a couple Finnish players from the Leafs organization, too, that are going to be playing. All teams, I believe, have made their roster decisions and have announced that the team, the 25 guys that they're bringing. But Team Canada just announced it earlier today. I'm very excited. Devin Levi appears to be the guy for them. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, Levi, let's stick on him because he's kind of the big goaltender. He's been playing for Northeastern this season. He's 16-7-1 with a .948 save percentage in 24 games. They actually got him from... So this is crazy. So he was a prospect of the Florida Panthers. Yeah, the Florida Panthers, who also have Spencer Knight and Sergei Bobrovsky and Chris Drieger before the Seattle expansion draft. They acquired him in a trade that was part of Sam Reinhart going back to Florida. They also got a first-round pick. That was a big one. I'm excited to see Owen Power from what he did at the very limited World Junior Hockey Championships. I'm excited to see Eric Staal, who right now signed a NHL veteran AHL contract. See how he does. I'm excited to see David Desharnais. It's been a while since he played. A lot of guys, you know, probably got to get back up to speed. But I'll watch this one. I will say, I'll watch this one. There's going to be some former players. There's going to be some youngsters, players that are prospects that are going to be good players in the NHL in the future. So I'm excited about that. The full list, if you want to go check it out, we've shared it up on the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast page at ST Hockey Podcast. Couple news and notes to get to before we head on out. Pittsburgh Penguins forward Teddy Bluger, unfortunately expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks after undergoing surgery to repair a fractured jaw. That team announced yesterday. 27-year-old had 8 goals and 9 assists in 40 games this year. He suffered it after taking a hit in the first period against the Winnipeg Jets. Bruce Boudreau, congratulations going out to him. Became the 29th coach in NHL history to coach 1,000 career games Sunday night against the St. Louis Blues. Unfortunately, they lost that game 3-1, but he said, "It's all I've ever wanted to do. Be involved in hockey." He said he still pinches himself about where he's at the stage. "I'm in awe of the fact that it's my 1,000th game." They did a little video tribute to him, paid respects, and congratulations to Bruce Boudreau on achieving that mark. And lastly, some trade news and rumors going on. The Arizona Coyotes defenseman Jacob Chychrun is one of very several intriguing defensemen. We talked about John Klingberg last week. As mentioned on 32 Thoughts, the podcast, Jeff Merrick, teams including the New York Rangers, the Boston Bruins, Florida Panthers, and Toronto Maple Leafs have been doing their due diligence and are all interested in acquiring the, this is wild to me, 23-year-old services. Now, he's an unrestricted free agent, I believe, at the end of the year. It will be a difficult decision if you are going to try and acquire him and you let him walk, but he has been a very good player on that defense and has been a catalyst so far and one of the very few bright spots there in Arizona. And he will be a guy worth monitoring as the trade deadline slowly makes its way through through March. All right, that about does it for the show today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to be a part of this show and a part of some very important topics that are going on, not just in the National Hockey League, but in the world of hockey altogether. And I think that being able to talk about these things and show support and representation and standing on the right side is incredibly important to what I do, and it's why that I have this platform to be able to speak on these things. And I plan on doing it in, you know, the near and distant future and everything else in between as well. All right, so that's it. Thanks for listening. ST Hockey Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just search Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast with Kyle Grimard, and it'll be there. If you want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, give me a review, give me a share, give me a like, whatever you got to do. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the week. It's snowing like crazy here in London, Ontario. I'll probably got to go shovel again now. Enjoy the rest of the week. Games. We're going to be making up some games in the next coming weeks here in Canada. We'll talk about that on the next episode and a whole lot more. Until then, enjoy. That's a wrap.